I would just be present. Like the meditative, like, well, you can't change it. It's happening. So let's address it. You have to just say, be like, wow, you're a very witty nun or whatever. And then you'll get a laugh because the audience will be like, yeah, that nun is trying to do all these jokes. And then you make that the game. Like, it's just being present and, well, what's coming up now? And let's use it.
Chris Gow is an improviser, writer, and director. He co-created Borderline and The Literary Adventure of Mr. Brown. Chris developed comedy scripts for Guilty Party, Hat Trick, Comedy Central, and more. Chris has directed 8 shows for the Edinburgh Festival and teaches and performs regularly at the Free Association. Me and Chris talks about the importance of playing the expected behavior in a scene, both with the specifics and emotions, so that the audience has something to relate to. We talk about being vulnerable, improv paradoxes, and to catch the wind. We also talk about a lot of nuns, bouncers, and to chill the fuck out. This is episode 71 with Chris Gow on Game and Grounding.
When I started doing improv, like, all I was obsessed with was game. I love game. That's what I got excited about. I come from like a stand-up background and like just watching loads of comedy movies and, you know, sketches. I just loved game and I was absolutely obsessed with game. So when I started doing it, that's all I was interested in, just finding a game and playing a game. And it's great. And that's the best thing about comedic improv, I think. But then, like, as I've like gone on through, I haven't been doing it that long. I've been doing improv like, I don't know, about, I guess 12 years now, something like that. And as I've gone through it, I've suddenly started to realize how important grounding is, this word grounding, and specifically why it's so useful to make things funny and to help play game. And grounding is the start of any scene or any comedic idea or any sketch or anything. It's just some reality that the audience is familiar with before something funny appears in it. And in general, like, we have to set up what we call the expected behavior of a scenario. And then, only then with that can something be funny. And it took me years to realize that. I was just so interested in playing a game. But you can't have a game until you understand what is being subverted, if that makes sense. So, you know, like, if you have two nuns in a convent, we all understand what two nuns do, generally. We all watch enough movies, we've seen enough plays, we've read enough books. I've never met a nun in real life. I've never been to a nunnery, but we understand what a nun does. And so what might nuns do generally? What's the expected behavior of nuns?
Pray,
a
choir,
sing in a choir,
do some gardener work,
gardening work,
and do some cooking work as well.
And what are they like normally, nuns? Just like peaceful,
yeah,
meditative,
kind.
Old ladies. So that's the grounded reality of nuns and like the expected behavior of nuns. And you have to just set that up, because only then, when you see something contrasting with that, like a mean nun, or a nun that doesn't like gardening, or a nun that doesn't believe in God. All these things we've said with the expected behavior, as soon as you see that contrast, then you know something funny is happening. And it's only with that context that something can be funny.
Yeah, it really makes sense. And as you said also in the beginning, like, it relates to the people in the audience.
Yeah.
But you said that grounding is something, what did you say, familiar to the audience?
Yeah.
What I understood from this so far is that grounding also can be like, it's a world where only mean nuns lives, or the voice of reason in the scene is the one that's unusual.
I think those are less successful scenes, personally. I don't actually teach that very often, because I find it easier to get laughs if, and we see sketches like this all the time where, let's say, all the nuns are mean and there's one nice nun, but that's really still playing on the idea that we all understand that nuns are meant to be.
Yeah, it's an extra layer.
It's an extra layer. But I often find it puts things, puts a distance between the audience because they've got to do that extra work. But we can just have fun being nuns, for instance, right, for a bit. And it just makes it way easier to perform because we just playing nuns for a bit, get into character, enjoy doing that for a bit. And then it's so easy to spot when someone does something strange. And that would be the first part of the game.
Right. And I think you said like something right now that enjoy doing that as well.
Yeah.
Because why don't we do this?
Yeah. So this is what I'm so obsessed about at the moment, which is I like showing when I'm teaching, but also when I'm performing. I previously would just like, quick, let's get to the game. I want to play a game. I want to be funny. But now I love just spending time just being a nun for a bit, or just being a superhero for a bit, or just being two people in an office, or just this, all the specifics, the emotions behind it. It's so fun. It's so fun to do. And because you're in a comedy theater, generally, when you perform this, another weird thing happens where if you're playing two nuns and you're just playing it as truthfully as you can, I don't know why we're obsessed with nuns, but we're two nuns and we're playing that as truthfully as we can, the audience will start to giggle and laugh anyway because they're waiting and they know something is coming and that tension is being built. And if you do it with a straight face and you stare unblinking into the sun and you don't worry about it and you just try your best to be a nun, something funny will happen.
Right.
But also the audience just cannot wait for it to happen.
Right.
But if you run out and you're like, I'm a weird nun, straight away everyone's like, I guess there's a weird nun here. It has a very limited returns if we run out and just don't do the grounding.
Exactly. And I think it's, personally, as an improviser, that why I've hard with premises is because it's always like it's nailed on the head,
yeah,
in the meaning of like the first sentence is often base reality and the first initial thing, so we never get time,
yeah,
to put up the base reality or,
yeah,
play none for real and play it as truthfully as you can. And as you said, and me also, like, we have this limitation of what a nun is, so eventually when we do this and commit to it 100%, yeah, eventually we will do something,
yeah,
which stands out.
Because you don't know the intricacies of what a nun is, like, because you've never been a nun.
Right.
So eventually something funny will happen.
And that's also the moment of surprise for you as an improviser as well.
Exactly.
And the audience, and me including, loves to see that.
Exactly. And so when I'm performing now, it's almost like a competition with myself. I'll come out as a nun and I will try as hard as I can to be a nun for as long as I can, as truthful as I can, making like big, strong nun choices, like not being coy or shy, just getting that momentum building because I know I'm going to trip up. And that's what's so fun when you trip up and your scene partner's like, you just tripped up. And then there's fun, right? Because there's only so much I know about being a nun. But if you make those big choices, that happens quicker. And like things happen and you build this momentum and it's really fun.
And by big choices, you mean like specific choices,
yeah,
as an improviser, like,
yeah,
that you have to be brave in a scene.
Yes, right, exactly. So it could be, I don't know, like just naming the different flowers in that garden that you're tending, or even saying to the Mother Superior, I'm having a crisis of faith. And any like big choice that a nun might make, some emotional choice, or I'm worried I've made a bad decision, I miss my family when I come to the nunnery. Whatever you think, like these big like choices, just choices. Because again, the longer I teach this, the more I do it. And it sounds so obvious and they always say it in books, but it's just so simple, improv. It's just listening and committing and then making choices. But it's quite hard to tell people that because it's so obvious. It's so elusively obvious. And until you've like done it like hundreds of times and died on stage, eaten shit on stage, you don't start to realize how true it is. And that's what I'm starting to realize the deeper I get into this weird craft that we do.
Yeah, it sounds like you really like have a grasp another level of,
yeah,
the understanding of,
yeah,
it. Because it's a saying, as these sayings like, make your partner look good, don't,
yeah,
be funny, this,
yeah,
is another one.
Play, yeah,
just be, just listen and react to these,
yeah,
things, right?
And all of those like aphorisms, those small like phrases are true, but because they're so true, They just go in your... They go in your ear and out the other ear. I went through all my notebooks from when I was a student, like when I was like the first 2 or 3 years as a student. I found them recently. I went through them. And I've got about 4 notebooks full of notes. And they all say the same thing again and again and again. I'm just writing it down and like in different ways. And there are these phrases. And like, I guess it just takes time. What's the expression? It's like... You hear the lesson when you're ready to learn it, almost.
When did you do it? Like, how long did you do it before it, like, really...
I remember... I'm not sure, but I remember a pivotal moment in the scene. And this is not interesting or funny, but it was just a moment when I realised, oh, something, like, clicked into place with grounding, let's say. And I was... Sometimes when you're in a scene, especially when you're learning this, like, you're constantly worrying about what am I meant to do now? Am I, how do I, what am I meant to do now? I don't know what to do. And like, am I going to say something that's wrong? Am I going to do something that's not funny? Or, and you're constantly worrying about stuff. And then I had this moment in a scene where someone, I was meant to be a bouncer of a nightclub, you know, like a doorman of a nightclub. And I was just the voice of reason, the straight man in the scene. The person who was trying to get into the club had some fun game. And I remember I didn't know what to do. And I didn't know how to make this scene funny. And I was very worried about it. And I just sort of gave up. And I was just like, I don't know what to do. So I'm just going to play a bouncer and say exactly what a bouncer would say and do exactly what a bouncer would do. And I just did that. And the audience went crazy. And they were like laughing at everything I said, even though everything I was saying was not technically funny, but because I was now some contrast and like giving the audience some relatability to this insane character in front of me, I was getting laughs from just being a bouncer and playing truthfully. And it really hit home then in that moment, like, oh, I just have to play truthfully and be the context in which, I can't remember what the game was, that the person in the scene was like, I don't know, I guess like, trying to impress everyone by trying to get into a club or something. And so every time I was a bouncer and wouldn't let them into a club because they were being annoying, huge laugh. And it was helping them also play their game because it made them more and more absurd. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And what I hear you saying is that like the experience of like, I'm blank, I don't know what to do, so I'll just play a bouncer.
Yeah.
And that experience led to a lot of laughs because we are all, in some way, comedians that want to do this,
yes,
right? And then we strive for the laughs and get them a confirmation with it.
Mm-hmm.
And normally the funny guy or the absurd gets the huge laugh. But I totally agree, like the voice of reason. And when I'm watching improv, I most often laugh at the voice of reason.
Yeah.
Because it's also constantly reminding me of this absurd thing that I'm in.
Exactly.
And I get this outer perspective of myself.
Exactly. And it's that outer perspective that actually makes us laugh because we're like, something can only be absurd if it is butting against reality. And that's what grounding is. And grounding can be anything. It can be, it doesn't mean boring or real life. It can be, you know, it can be just 2 people on a date. It can be 2 people in an office, 2 people in a doctor's waiting room, aka the 3 most common scenes you see in improv. But it can also be 2 superheroes fighting.
Yeah. For real then.
Yeah, but for real. And if a superhero is fighting, 2 superheroes are fighting and they're shooting lasers out of their eyes and they're flying, that's all grounded. That's the expected behavior.
Exactly.
And then when one of them says, I got to stop, I got to go and do my tax return, straight away you're like, oh, this is fun. I understand why this is strange because we've set up the expectation and before we've subverted it. And really it's just yes anding, really, yeah, that base level. It's like creating something before you knock it down again.
But what if it's like the reason why we don't play so much grounding or why it takes a long time is because we never allow ourselves to play grounding because we want to be, especially on like stage, on the performance.
This is such a good point. And like, I struggle with it for so long and I still struggle with it. I think, like you say, everyone who does this wants to get laughs. Let's not pretend. You know, I suppose unless you're doing some sort of dramatic improv, but everyone who's learning this or performing it is doing it because they like being funny. and they love playing with funny people, and they love making people laugh. And that laughter is a real, like, it's like a weight on your back, because the more you want it and the more you lean into an audience, the more the audience pull back. They're like, no, thank you. Jesus, what is wrong with you? Like, stop trying so hard. So it's just like, that's why I think improv is so satisfying. It's this endless, like, paradox, like, or like you're trying to, like, surf a wave at all points, where the more you try to be funny, the less funny you are. The less funny you are, often the more funny you are. The more you can just be natural on stage and play truthfully, the funnier you are. But it doesn't feel like that when you're learning. It feels like you need quick fixes, because you're there and you're scared and you're feeling very vulnerable on stage. And so a laugh makes you relax. And so often people get a quick laugh to make themselves feel relaxed.
Yeah.
But then the scene is fucked because they've been a mean nun straight out on the gate, and they get a big laugh. Ha ha. The audience understands. Nuns aren't mean. We get a laugh. And then for the rest of the scene, you don't get any laughs because everyone is, why is this nun being so mean? Is everyone mean in this world? Everyone's just confused. But paradoxically, if we spend some time just playing nuns for a bit and then we're mean, then the audience understands and we get bigger laughs, richer laughs. And that start of the scene while we're playing nuns actually relaxes us and actually makes us feel calmer. And we suddenly realize, oh, we don't have to just chase laughs all the time.
Right. Why I don't really like and enjoy sometimes the premises, the verbal premises, is because it's so much other thing that happens that are unusual for me before that.
I think people misunderstand premise. I guess your listeners know what all of this is. We're really deep jargon here, but like, I think once we understand how to pull and do things from premises, I think we get better at it and we get better at finessing it. At the moment, you know, like, often when we're learning premise and we're starting with premise, like, we just grab a funny thing and we just start with a game. And you can do that because an audience has watched someone, let's say, give a monologue and has given us the context. So they understand that if I told a true story about the time that I really wanted a Christmas present and I got the Christmas present and then I was upset that I got the right Christmas present, everyone would laugh because it's weird. Why did you get upset about getting the right Christmas present? But because people have watched and heard this story, we all understand what Christmas is like, and we all understand that you're meant to be grateful when you get a Christmas present. And so you can skip that grounding to a certain extent, and you can go quite quickly because the audience has been given some context. But as we get better at this and we finesse it, you can start a scene really grounded and do all that work again. You can just be out on Christmas morning and you can just do a Christmas scene for a little bit before you play this game from a premise. So it's the same principle at work, but it's just finessed slightly. Does that make
sense? Yeah, it is. And also, like, the practical aspect of it, like, time-wise, that we might only have like 20 minutes, for example, so that we might hit it hard.
But I think, as you get more, it gets more nuanced and we get better at hitting it hard or hitting it more subtly and still doing that grounding at the front. But I think you raised something really interesting, which I find fascinating, which is this idea of standing on stage and feeling vulnerable. And we all do it, right? We're all constantly, how do you feel? You're a performer. Like, how do you feel when you stand on stage? Do you feel nervous, afraid, excited? Well, how do you feel?
I guess all of these feelings, but it depends so much on the context and the situation. And so I'm getting nervous when we are here and I'm going to, like, the class show that we were supposed to do.
Yeah.
It's just a class show, like, that I host normally in Sweden. But I will be feeling nervous, definitely.
Yeah.
It's in my second language. It's another scene.
Yeah.
All these things. And
People
that I look up to might be in the audience, like, these kind of things, right?
Yeah.
But when I perform regularly, like, in Sweden, if I do it for 150 people.
Yeah.
I'm just feeling fun,
yeah,
and excited.
And it's so interesting. What I find so fascinating about that, and I'm the same, exactly the same. I think everyone is the same. Like, we know how to improvise. We can make 150 people laugh like that in our, in a home crowd, and when we feel confident. and we're using exactly the same skills. And yet, if you take them out of where we feel comfortable, suddenly you're nervous and you make strange choices. And it's so mental. It's all so in our heads. There's no difference between the improv we're doing, but somehow we just start freaking out. And I find that, again, that's why grounding, if we go back to grounding, is so useful, I think, because we can just take our time for a little bit, chill the fuck out for a bit, connect with our scene partner. And as soon as you connect with your scene partner for a bit, the audience fades away and all the things we have to worried about, hold, there's a comedian in the audience, I won't think I'm funny. There's a girl or boy in the audience who I fancy. I'm a teacher and I've got to be in front of a student. All those things that are like sort of ridiculous worries. If you just grab it and you're just playing a nun for a bit with your scene partner, try to be a nun, all of that, you forget all of it because you're just trying to be a nun.
Right. For me, that's when we connect to the, like, this thing of also being present, that has importance with meditation and all these parallels. And also to play as a kid.
Yeah.
Like, yes, play.
Yeah.
And that's what happens then. And then eventually something will pop up.
Yeah.
Of course.
And I think that's, if you're thinking you exactly right, is that idea of play. It's hard to play when you feel judged. It's hard to play when you're trying to impress someone. You don't play and impress someone. It's impossible.
Yeah.
It's hard to play when you've been at work all day and you're tired. Like, all of those things. The only thing that will make you play is connecting with someone. And
right.
In this case, is your scene partner.
But sometimes I think it can be very nice to see, like, vulnerable doesn't necessarily mean equal stress on stage. Like,
or,
so vulnerable on stage can also be like, I'm still present with you, but I'm vulnerable in the sense of I might do something that I find extra hard, like singing on stage.
Yeah.
Or like, but, and I don't want them to retreat.
Yeah.
Right. I want to take a step forward.
Yeah.
Owning it. And that I can enjoy that so much, to watch an improviser take that choice. Like, I see that.
Yeah.
It's really embarrassing now.
And I think that vulnerability, if we can be present with it on stage, is when improv is at its best.
Right.
Because the audience also loves the fact, they know because of the twinkle in your eye that you don't want to be singing. And you're singing and they love you for it. But instead, especially when we're early to stagecraft, we like retreat and hide from that in case we make a fool of ourselves. But again, this paradox that the more we lean into it and the more we are brave, the more the audience like it and relate to it and respect it and laugh harder. So it's like that constant, like, trying to lean into your fear. And all the time I'm worrying about this. I don't think anyone stops worrying about this or stops like feeling shit on stage, or definitely gets on stage and isn't present with their scene partner. But invariably the worst shows are when that doesn't happen, and the best shows are when that does happen. So I just find it really interesting. It's like trying to catch the wind. That's what is so nice about it. It's like meditation. You brought meditation up. It's exactly like meditation, I think. Just like trying to be, what's the word? Equanimitable. Just like watching things come and go and not having any judgment about it.
Yeah, that comes naturally when you're in your scene partner playing the nun.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
If you do it for real.
Yeah. And if you do it for real, that's the point. Instead of like, I'm going to pretend by a nun, but really I'm thinking of nun jokes so I can get that laugh from that boy or girl I fancy in the audience. Like,
how do you do if you play with a person that are watching, like, doing that? Are you like, are you verbalize it? Like,
I would just be present. Yeah, like the meditative, like, well, you can't change it. It's happening. So let's address it. Like, you have to just say, be like, well, you're a very witty nun or whatever. And then you'll get a laugh because the audience will be like, yeah, that nun is trying to do all these jokes. And then you make that the game. Like, it's just being present and, okay, well, what's coming up then? And let's use it. There's no mistakes, really. It's just indecision.
Yeah. And like saying what's already happening.
Yeah.
Just say it out loud and it will get a laugh.
It always gets a laugh. Always.
I like that. And before we're rounding up, Chris, I want you to ask, like, the three most common notes that you usually give, if that's fine, like, if you can.
Yeah. The chill the fuck out, chill the fuck out, chill the fuck out. They're the three most common notes.
Yeah.
And like, it's kind of facetious saying that, but it's true. Like, everyone is so worried and like there's so much to do, especially when you're learning as a student. There's just so much to do and worry about. And like, are you doing it right? I've got all this theory in my head. But actually, if you just slow down and take your time, everything slowly clicks into place, I would say. That would be my three notes.
Yeah. And also...
Oh, and give your teacher like gifts at the end of class.
But also there's like, it hasn't been any show that you have watched afterwards, like, this was so good. Yeah, what did they do then?
I remember I've seen loads of amazing shows. And the thing about improv is like, out of the room, they're often, it's like recounting a dream, like, to someone. They're really boring.
Right. Yeah.
Talk about them because that's the joy of improv. Like, it is a, like, an inside joke for the people in that room witnessing it being built. But I remember seeing Jim Woods, who's an amazing improviser. He's from LA, and he was living here and teaching here for a long while at the beginning of the theatre. And he's on a team in LA called the Smokes, I think, with like Will Hines and all these great people, Billy Merritt. And I remember seeing up to that point, before Jim and my friend Mike, who sort of founded this theatre, before they came over, I'd only seen sort of English improv and the scene here. And it was fun and I enjoyed it. But seeing these Americans come over and play like so emotionally truthful, that was the difference. And I remember just seeing Jim was such a funny performer. He's so great. And it was just because he would just emotionally be truthful in scenes. And I don't know what it's like. You're from Sweden, right? But the English, I feel they're probably similar to the Scandinavian. Like, English people are kind of like repressed and they're quite guarded and they've got that stiff upper lip thing going that I think a lot of sort of, and what that means is everyone is trying to be witty all the time instead of, and not like being vulnerable. So they're always like quite stiff and they might be smart and funny, but there was never any heart to anything. And I just remember a scene with Jim and Mike, and it was just so funny because there were just these two idiots who like really, I can't remember what it was about. It's like they really cared about running their circus successfully, but they just cared about things. And it made it so funny and like heartwarming and like just felt like a real, like you were watching a play almost, a really funny play. And that was the moment I was like, oh, there's something else here that is not just about getting laughs.
Yeah, does that mean it does? Absolutely does. And you said it, like, to care. Yeah, it's called honesty. Yeah. It's such a huge thing, and I think it's also a bit cultural in the sense of Swedes or Englishmen. Yeah.
Yeah. What's it like in Sweden? Is it the same?
Yeah, I'd say so. But like, we have more. I think we are, in a way, and what I've heard and when I went to different festivals and so is that we are pretty good at also like space working, building based reality in the sea, like visually anyway, and also like the acting. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, we are like a bit, as people, we don't show our feelings that much.
Yeah, yeah.
Like explicitly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is hard in improv. I think the English are the same in general. I mean, of course.
And can be vulnerable as well.
Yeah, very verbal. And I think it creates a barrier between you and the audience because you can't really see the person behind it.
Exactly.
But I performed in Sweden once at Uppsala.
Oh, really? At Swim?
Yeah.
An improv?
Yeah, it's really fun. Mm. It was really, really fun. Mm. Really fun.
All right, Chris.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you for letting me having you.
Great. Yama's a very good student and a very good teacher, so definitely employ him.
Oh, that's nice. How do you know about the teaching stuff?
Because he told me.